Welcome, everyone, and thank you for being here for our first breakout session of the day. My name is Flannery Winchester. I'm CCL's Communications Director. If you were with us for the opening plenary, you heard from Ellie Johnston during the panel. We are pleased that Ellie is also our speaker for this breakout. In case you didn't make it to the plenary, allow me to introduce Ellie. Ellie Johnston leads Climate Interactive's global climate and energy efforts. She has built up Climate Interactive's engagement programs to extend to thousands worldwide, from top journalists to leading decision makers to school children. Ellie has been a speaker at UN meetings, the White House, the African Union, and many universities. And her work has been cited in publications like the New York Times, Associated Press, and Washington Post. During this breakout, Ellie will demonstrate En-ROADS, a transparent policy simulation model that gives people the chance to experiment with different scenarios that limit future global warming. Ellie will not only demonstrate this model, but also share how you can use it in your advocacy. So thank you for being here today, Ellie, and over to you.
Great, thanks. Thanks so much to you all too for joining this breakout. At Climate Interactive, our name is Climate Interactive. We like to be interactive. So I'm going to be asking something of you all in this breakout. And just to show you all the platform I'll be using, there's this, it's called Poll Everywhere. And let me just share my screen. And so if you, I'm just curious, just to get us oriented with Poll Everywhere, if you could go to this website and then just click on the map where you are joining in from today, that'll get us started and give us a sense of who's in the room and where you all are from here. Yeah, thanks, Ricky, for dropping the link straight in. So click on that link, open it in another tab, or just hang tight. And let me make sure that this is activated. All right, there they come. Okay, I see some people, someone in Maine, a few people in California, some folks out in the Midwest, Florida, someone in Hawaii. Great to see Washington State. It's looking a little vacant. Okay, there's a few pins coming in for North Carolina. That's where I'm talking to you all from today. So it's great to be joined by people from all over. It looks like somebody might be out there in the UK. Great to see South Africa. Great to have some international participants joining in with all of us Americans here. Awesome. So that was great. I'm going to go back. You can fill it out if you want, but I'm going to go back to En-ROADS. And as I was just saying in the panel discussion, there have been tons of you all, CCL volunteers out there across the country and the world. We've done some engagement with the CCL Africa group in using En-ROADS, this global simulations, global climate solutions simulator to model things like carbon pricing that I know you all are working so hard on. And so what we're looking at here is actually a scenario that I just created in the last session of a rough estimate of what it would look like if the entire world adopted the Energy Innovation Act, the bill that of course you all are pushing for so hard. And I'm curious, and one of the questions that as Tony and I were talking before the conference that he had to me was, what comes next? What beyond carbon pricing might be worth considering and thinking about? And I, you know, I can come up with my answer, but really the way in which we see En-ROADS being really effectively used is to not do so much lecturing and but more just engaging people in a conversation. So I'm going to do the best I can here with the hundreds of us that are present. And I'm going to put the question back to you all. What do you all think would be a good thing to try next when it comes to different types of climate action if we have a success with a carbon price? And so you can look across the En-ROADS simulator here. We have things like addressing coal, oil, or natural gas directly. We can tax or subsidize these different types of energy supply sources, touch things like energy efficiency, electrification, carbon removal, or different land use change, and also these kind of big topics of population or economic growth. So I'm going to go back to this poll. Thank you all for populating it. Wow, we have such great coverage across the country. Of course, Glad to see some people joining from Alaska and out there in the ocean. Great. Okay, so the next question is, I want to ask you all, what else is needed? And write your response in, keep it super succinct. As the responses come in, if you see one that you have already, that you were gonna write in, upvote it. And so we can get kind of live tracking as we go. But I'm curious to hear from you all. What do you think we might try out there? So several people already suggesting, how about carbon removal, afforestation or electrification of transportation, methane? That's definitely been a big topic. I don't know if you all saw last week, coming out of the climate negotiations, there's this global pledge to reduce methane emissions that I think over 100 countries signed on to. And this is the first time I've seen a lot of significant attention going to what do we do about methane emissions. So people mentioning that. I'll give you all just a few, a little bit more time here to vote on different things. And then we'll go back to En-ROADS and we'll explore which kinds of different efforts might we try. Okay, I'm gonna start with the top two that are coming in. Let's see, we have carbon removal, electric transit, and methane. And oh, energy efficiency just jumped in ahead of methane. All right, excellent. So going back over here to En-ROADS, what we're looking at, again, just to orient you to the interface here that we have global sources of primary energy. And in this scenario in which we have, I'll just show you where we start from with En-ROADS. And so where we started from before even adding a carbon price in, which we did earlier, is we start with a scenario with that's called our baseline, which is a scenario of no additional significant action on climate. It's kind of looking at what are current trends in terms of, like, we see the renewable energy costs dropping precipitously. So that continues in this baseline scenario, and we see continued growth of renewable energy, but not anything in addition to or well above what we're already seeing in terms of the data of what's actually happening. But we add in different things, and then we can get a scenario that gets us closer to that goal of staying well below 2 degrees and aiming for 1.5. On the left, global sources of primary energy. What are the types of energy that are needed to meet energy demand? So this covers both our electricity demand and all those fuels, you know, the fuels that power cars and airplanes and things like that. Obviously, I know many of you all know this, but those fossil fuels are the biggest culprit when it comes to driving greenhouse gas emissions. So coal, oil, and gas contributes significantly to growing greenhouse gas emissions, which without action, we would see them continue to rise throughout the end of the century, leading to devastating 3.6 degrees. Obviously, absolutely not the world that we want, nor are we working towards. So say we have a carbon price added to that. Well, that can help significantly. And you see in this scenario that coal, oil, and gas is now steadily going down. We have growing renewable energy that's by the end of the century really taking up a significant amount of contributing to all of our energy needs. And then we have greenhouse gases falling steadily, but not hitting that goal of zero by 2050, still well above 2 degrees. So still leading to very severe climate impacts that we would do well to avoid if at all possible. So the first thing I heard a lot of people upvoting was this question of carbon removal. And when I think about carbon removal, there's kind of two different buckets. And some of those buckets overlap in some ways, but we have those ways of drawing down carbon that largely come from growing things. So you have tree planting, that's afforestation, or you have different ways of growing biomass and then storing it underground through like biochar. Agricultural soil carbon is wrapped into that. We hear a lot these days about regenerative agriculture. How do we keep our soils healthy so that they retain the amount of carbon out there? Then there is the types of ways of drawing carbon out of the atmosphere that are more technological. And the like one of the ones I think about is particularly in this category is called direct air capture. So this is using these big machine, industrial machines that would suck carbon out of the atmosphere. Right now, those technologies are very expensive and they take a lot of energy to power because you're kind of working against physics. All of that CO2 out there and you're trying to suck it into something in a more concentrated form and store it underground, that takes a lot of energy. So for that to be successful, it would of course require a lot of that to be powered by renewable energy. Here within En-ROADS, we have it as afforestation technological carbon removal. And under the technological carbon removal category are some of these things that I was describing as more biomass-based, bioenergy, carbon capture and storage is sort of a hybrid of those two. Direct air capture, I mentioned, enhanced mineralization. This is like crushing up rocks and then spreading them, a particular type of rock that can draw down carbon out of the atmosphere. And why are we even talking about carbon removal? I want to take a step back here. We hear a lot about carbon emissions. So everything that we're pumping into the atmosphere. And one way to think about this is like a bathtub. So imagine the faucet, the tap of that bathtub as emissions. All of that's where things are coming into the atmosphere. The level of that bathtub, that's the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And what we wanna do is keep that level from rising any further and actually make it go down. So how do you drain a bathtub? Well, two ways, right? Well, first you gotta make sure that the removals are happening. So we have to take carbon out in our metaphorical bathtub. And we also have to turn off that tap. So we can look at, we have this graph here, removals and land use, CO2 emissions and removals. So you see here in 2021, we are emitting about twice as much into the atmosphere as what we are pulling down, covering all of the different natural ways in which we're absorbing carbon from the atmosphere. And then if we do something and we say like, hey, what if we're successful in all of these different types of carbon removals, just kind of a scattershot approach, what could that do? And the way we captured this within En-ROADS is we looked at the studies of others, and we're doing this across the tool. We look at the studies of others and say, okay, what are they saying about carbon dioxide removal? And in this case, we looked to the Royal Society, so the UK's preeminent science body, and they had done a report on carbon removal and said, here's our estimates of what is possible. So I'm going to move this up 50%. And I'll tell you, 50% is we would be wildly successful because that would mean that we get a whole suite of different types of climate actions. That helps. It helps bring us down. And you can see what's happening here. That blue line representing that drain, it crosses the red line. That's kind of that net zero point, net zero CO2 in this case, that's occurring when we're factoring in all of the different types of removals and then those CO2 emissions coming down. So that helps. It would go far, and we need to really consider what it would actually take to scale these things up, because we're talking about scaling up technologies that are largely exist in research phase at a very high rate. So there's a lot of people who say we need to be cautious about how much we bet on that. The next thing I saw mentioned was electric transportation. So tons of buzz about this. Also, in all of the flood of different pledges coming out of COP26, there were also commitments from auto manufacturers and some governments around committing to really phasing out the production of the internal combustion engine. Wow, this is big. And how much would that actually help? So transport electrification. So if we have electric cars, trains, buses, all of that kind of stuff, it's only effective in as much as the source of energy for that type of transit is clean. So for example, there is a situation that I read about in China where there's a coal power plant where they want to get the coal across the bay. And so they have an electric ship that they're developing, but that electric ship is entirely powered off of coal. So is only doing so much to address climate. But in our scenario here, with the carbon price that we have added, there's a lot of clean energy, a lot of renewable wind and solar being developed. So as we increase the electrification of our transport, that means we can get off of oil that much faster. And as I do this, oh, that's buildings and industry. Let me replay that change. So we were here, and just to highlight what is going on, let's look at our oil demand. So already oil was going down significantly due to the carbon price. And when we add in that electrification, look at the angle of that curve. It means that we can make that transition off of oil that much faster, because all of a sudden there's just this switch where the path towards electrification gets driven both by the complementary policies that could come along in addition to just there being a total price on carbon. The third and fourth things I saw coming in from your votes was around energy efficiency. So of course, this is a big one. What do we do about energy demand? And if we improve energy efficiency, this can be just money in people's pockets. There's so much opportunity here. In my house here in Western North Carolina, I just finished insulating the basement and the attic. And so it was an upfront investment, but I'm gonna be able to save hundreds and hundreds of dollars over the years in terms of lower heating costs, particularly in the winter, and then cooling costs during the summer. So if we do that across the board, particularly thinking about building standards that we might support in terms of policies, things like that, we can you can see what happens is when I do this action, pay attention to the total height of global sources of primary energy over here. I'm gonna replay it. So it was going up, now it's coming down. That's, you know, less land that needs to be secured to build out solar panels and wind farms. That is, you know, the scale in which we need to make this transition, it can be more right-sized for the moment if we can have that in addition with energy efficiency policies. So definitely something to think about there. Let's see. And then the other thing, methane. I was speaking a little bit to this earlier, but methane has been on the minds of many in the last 2 weeks. And we see Biden making some moves around methane reductions. One of the things that's being really hard fought right now within the reconciliation process and in that infrastructure bill is around a fee on methane. And I was seeing that the senator who leads the Conservative Climate Caucus had made some public statements this week that said that he supports a methane fee, and that could be something that he would be willing to work with Democrats on. So methane, what if we reduce methane? And in addition to methane, here within En-ROADS, we also include other types of greenhouse gases. So CO2, we talk a lot about because it's the biggest contributor to climate change, but methane is another significant contributor, as well as nitrous oxide, N2O, which shows up in our industrial agricultural systems. The F gases, which are more, they show up in refrigeration, air conditioning, and then like also the semiconductor industry, things like that use F gases. So those are some of the other types of greenhouse gases that we need to consider as we think about, okay, what else is out there that we need to be addressing? And so here, what if we reduce our methane and other gases? I'll just reduce it all the way. And you can see that makes a really significant difference in terms of our temperature outcome and where we were. This looks like a whole suite of different kinds of actions, from really thinking about our agricultural system and how do we support farms and food production of all kinds to reduce waste and to make sure those farming practices are not generating loads and loads of methane and nitrous oxide. And then it's also looking at the industry and our landfills and all kinds of different places. Like, we're gonna really need to be detectives of where there are other greenhouse gases out there, and the refrigeration industry. So thinking about all the air conditioning units is already starting to get wheels in motion to figure out how do they really entirely eradicate hydrofluorocarbons, a type of F gas, from their manufacturing and production. Particularly, you know, remember again, En-ROADS is global. And so when we think about where is there growth in these industries, it's gonna be in places like India, where it's really hot. And as people get more access to better and better livelihoods and they improve their lives, they're going to want to cool them down. And so making sure that we can just leapfrog over that old outdated air conditioning technology that requires HFCs and contributes to climate change and use more modern air conditioning units that are more beneficial. This is something I know many of you all are familiar with the work of Drawdown. They've really called a lot of attention to this work around HFCs and refrigeration and that kind of thing. So this gets us to 1.6. That's wonderful. I'm going to share this scenario in the chat, and I'll let you all play with it. Maybe you don't think technological carbon removal is possible, and you want to test out some other things. So you all can do that, or you can share the scenario, create your own scenarios. Put them out on whatever social media, send them to your friends, send them out to your colleagues within your CCL chapters, all that kind of thing. So I definitely encourage you to do that. And I know a lot of you all out there have found success in engaging people, particularly your representatives and senators and different politicians that you're able to meet with in using En-ROADS as one of those tools in your toolkit for talking to decision makers about what's needed on climate. And the way I would really encourage you all to do that is to start with a blank slate. Just start it like this. And you might not even necessarily lead with, your desire to want to talk about a carbon price, if that's what you're there to. But just try and open up the conversation to create space for curiosity and questioning. And just start with a question to the audience or the person you're working with and say, what do you think is really essential on climate? And then test those things out and then keep working through a scenario and you'll see what things are the most effective and you'll see where there's a really high leverage. And through that kind of dialogue, back and forth, I've seen it dozens and dozens of different times. You'll see these light bulbs go off with people where they might not have been open to whatever the type of thing that you were thinking about initially was, but through working through a simulator, they can see, they can kind of get their thing on the table. So a lot of us, have our one climate thing. So I'll talk to friends who they really want to talk about, diets or something like that. Say, okay, we'll reduce some emissions from methane and other. What else? And you can use it as a really powerful way of engaging others through that. I'll stop there because I'm sure there are a ton of really great questions. Does someone there on the CCL side have an eye on the questions and have seen any that would be helpful to jump into?
Yes, Ellie, we do have folks have been putting their questions in Poll EV, and we have a few minutes here at the end. So I will just pick out a few, and if folks are looking at Poll EV, you can upvote questions that you'd like us to ask while we have a few minutes here at the end. So one I'll start with, this question says, why is oil so stubborn? It seems to remain on the graph. Oh, hold on, my Poll EV has just
refreshed. Oh, sorry, that was my fault.
No problem. No, I'm on my screen.
I'll go back.
No, it's fine. But they said it seems to remain on the graph through 2100. So do you have any insight into that?
Yeah. So there are one thing in this scenario, we electrified transport. So we got the transport sector largely off of oil. When we move the slider, however, I will note that it is electrifying all of our land-based transit. So this is trains, buses, cars, trucks, that kind of thing. But that last 15% that is aviation and long haul cargo ships, there are some big technological barriers that scientists are still trying to work through to figure out how we're going to electrify commercial airlines, planes, and then ships. You think about how long a ship takes to cross the ocean. Where is it going to charge its batteries? So in those cases, we'll need to look towards other things besides electrification. But because we haven't ramped up electrification in those, you'll see we've got about, we're pushing 85% or so of all the money being spent on transit is going towards things that are electric by the end of the century. But that's still a gap. And then the other thing is in buildings and industry. So the carbon price that we have in this scenario is definitely driving a big shift away from oil and natural gas use, because those are really expensive energy sources. But there are still applications in which it's just going to be really hard to get away from. And so that's some of that, some of the like tail end of that transition. We have to be ready. It's going to be very, very difficult. How do you get, you know, I think about a lot of times when I think about electrification, I think about like cement industry, steel industry, applications where you need extremely high heat to do, to make the product, and electric, we have to figure out how to do that well with electric generation. That's where things like hydrogen might come into the picture, and other types of energy storage that maybe could provide that kind of, or just high performance biofuels that are sustainable. That could be a piece of it, but that's why oil is sort of persistent there, even at low levels. It's just because there's some industries where it's gonna be really tough.
Got it. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. This question I saw actually during the panel as well, so I'm gonna raise it. It's sort of a higher level question. This person saying, the staffer from my member of Congress's office respects En-ROADS, but questions its assumptions. How should I respond to his concerns? And so I saw other questions where folks were wondering, basically, how do you convince someone that the model is sound? So do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm thinking about you all who might be using En-ROADS in those meetings, and how do you respond to that kind of question? So one thing, there's a couple different angles on that. You can feel free to send them our way. We would be happy to talk to a member of Congress that just wants, or a staffer that wants to roll up their sleeves and really dig in. So we're open to that. You can contact us at support@climateinteractive.org and send them our way. And we're happy to support you in that. And then also, if you go under simulation here, the thing is also, in those moments, it's an opportunity to learn, to really understand what's behind that person's line of inquiry. And there's a lot of different directions that can take. So another, if someone's really questioning the assumptions, you can say, okay, well, what are you getting at? Like, what are you interested in that you don't think is represented there? And here under the simulations menu, under assumptions, we have a long list of different kind of underlying assumptions of En-ROADS that can be adjusted. And we really try to be transparent and open to the fact that there are different possibilities out there. And there is a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the speed at which technologies can change and scale up, and what future costs might be. And also some things around the climate system too. So you can dig in here and say, and look at things like, maybe somebody's like, oh, you know, I've been reading about permafrost and wanna look at that. So dig into our assumptions there. Or sometimes it's about climate sensitivity. So how sensitive our entire climate system is to a doubling of carbon. Some people say it's higher, some people say it's lower. This is, climate sensitivity is one of those areas where the latest IPCC report that came out just a few months ago kind of revised those estimates, and we actually updated En-ROADS. We tend to update En-ROADS every month, but in light of the IPCC report, we changed the bounds on that climate sensitivity setting to respond to the IPCC. And what we're doing to kind of build our own confidence in En-ROADS is rigorous testing. And a lot of times what that looks like is running comparisons against both history and the projections of others. So for example, if we look at, we go under the different graphs, and we can go to model comparison. And let's compare, for example, the marginal cost of solar, which has been dropping steadily in the last 30 years. It's just a remarkable good news story when it comes to the climate, how much solar costs have been falling. So we make sure that En-ROADS captures that dynamic. And so making sure that our cost curves reflect what history is. And then also we've done a lot of work of doing comparisons. Let's see if I can very quickly pull it up. to the IPCC's report. So there's tons of these more aggregated models called the integrated assessment models that the IPCC uses in coming up with their kind of findings. And what we have done is run comparisons of what En-ROADS achieves to those what are known as SSPs. So what you're looking at here is a graph from 2000 to 2100 of all these different other scenarios from other models. And each color is representing a different type of pathway. So some of them represent the world working together to harmoniously expand wind and solar, and others represent more kind of clashing of countries, and there's different kinds of demographic scenarios. So when we run those scenarios through En-ROADS, you can see how we fall within the pack. And this is another way of how we build confidence, is making sure these things kind of line up. So that's just a few of the ways. But if you're in that moment and you're just not sure, just tell the person that, you know, you'll get back to them and reach out to us. And we are more than happy to support you all, particularly when it comes to engaging with decision makers. This is why we built En-ROADS, to really help people understand and get to the bottom of what works and what doesn't, and which kinds of assumptions are we might test and try out.
That's great. Well, thank you for explaining that, Ellie. And we are now at the end of our breakout session. So thank you overall for demonstrating this wonderful tool and for all your hard work on it. I know that our volunteers really have enjoyed it so far and will continue to make use of it. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you all. Find good uses for En-ROADS out there.
We sure will. All right. And next.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.